Friday night show for you on the Antimatter Radio Show tonight. A number of issues came up yesterday, such as the internet was down in my neighborhood yesterday, so we could not run the show at its normal time. So we're having a special Friday night show. This is a long series is going to start tonight on the history and philosophy and nature of religion. Subtitle is Ecstasy, Extraterrestrials, Light, Meditation, Dragons, and Divinity. So tonight's show is part one. We'll go for about, I'd say, 2 hours or so. And this should be a long series. There should be 5, 10, or 15 parts to this series. This is religion is the most important topic, and that's why I'm giving it such special treatment. My name is Jeffrey Grupp. This is the Antimatter Radio Show, live Friday, September 26th, 11:13 p.m. Eastern, coming from West Lafayette, Indiana. A beautiful, cloudy, rainy evening tonight. Let's talk about some of the upcoming shows before we get into tonight's show. Next week, we're also starting another very long series, which will probably go 5, 10, or 15 shows, and that is on Eastern religion. Subtitle is Light, Bliss, Meditation, Ancient Flying Machines, and Nirvana. That, as some of you know, was my specialty when I taught in the university system at Purdue University and Indiana University, and I'll be able to teach those topics in a way I was never able to teach before due to the fact that I'm uncensored now here on BBS Radio Network. That's also the same for tonight's lecture on show on religion. I taught religion in the university system before I stopped teaching, and it never really went very well because the students, it was not the right audience for that topic. As you'll discuss religion tonight, it's quite a powerful, fiery topic. It's not what you hear in church, what you hear in Sunday school, that's for sure. That's all pretty much some different sort of way of looking at religion. So in 2 weeks, we're going to have tentatively scheduled a show called The New World Order Wants the New World Order to Fail. That's sort of a continuation of the September 10th show, which was about how I brought forward the theory that the New World Order wants to purposely disclose 9/11. They're acting like they don't want to, but they purposely are trying to disclose it in order to start revolution. And that's quite a well-developed theory that I covered on September 10th. It was also covered two times on Dr. Bill Deagle's show when I was a guest there. And the show is also on YouTube from September 10. So that's a pretty well-developed theory. And there's been many articles about 10 articles I've written, published on either Infowars.com or RestoreTheRepublic.com covering that theory. So on October 8th, we've got a continuation of that. October 15, tentatively scheduled, is the second part of The Nature and Philosophy of Religion, part two. So that'll be a continuation of tonight's show. And tentatively scheduled on October 23rd, we'll see if we can get this one to happen, is Michael Tsarian is saying he wants to come on the show, and that's tentatively the date that he's given. So that'll be a huge show, the biggest show yet for the Antimatter Radio Show. And then on October 30, tentatively scheduled, I've got planned the Numerology Part 2 show. So needless to say, that's quite an exciting set of shows coming up. So I'd like to tell you about something on the antimatterradio.com website. There's a new, if you go to the site, it's been rearranged slightly, and on the very homepage, antimatterradio.com, there's a video that I think all of you should go and watch. It's I'm not just saying this to bring traffic to my site. This video is, I think, astounding. It's the title of the video is Proof That Conehead Skulls Are Extraterrestrials. And as listeners of this show know, we've covered coneheads on this show numerous times in the past. I think just even 2 weeks ago we did. And so I'm not going to go over exactly what they are. Again, you can go watch that video. But I would say that this video that I've constructed and put on the website, which is a summary of some of the issues I've discussed about the conehead skulls on past shows, these skulls that are in museums around the world, such as in South America. I would say this video, I've been thinking about it all week, and it pretty much sums up to me that these entities, these skulls were some sort of advanced being, extraterrestrial something. And needless to say, this is about the biggest news story in history. Of course, that's exactly why our mainstream media, which likes to talk about Michael Jackson's funeral and all this other garbage, is why they won't cover it. Okay, so go to antimatterreator.com and watch that video. It is just astounding. It's I think you'll be quite pleased with what you see. So let's start talking about the nature and philosophy of religion. After I finished my philosophy master's degree from Western Michigan University, studying under Quentin Smith, I studied Buddhist philosophy, atomism, and the philosophy of physics when I was there. I published about a dozen articles, some of which were in the top academic journals in the world for philosophy. I started a second master's degree in comparative religion there at Western Michigan University. I only made it 1 year into the program because it was definitely not what I was looking for. The program was, when I looked at what they were telling me, very nice folks in the program, but when I looked at what they were telling me and then I looked at what religion was, I did not see a correlation. I saw that they were in the academic program, the comparative religion there at Western Michigan University, they were filled with lots of nice theories about what religion was. But then when I looked at the religion in the world, in the religious texts, it was nothing to do with what they were talking about. They were largely concerned with linguistic ideas and cultural ideas that were just very specific to the contemporary age and not about the power and depth of what religion is in itself. So I've written and thought about religion through the years, and this is my number one favorite topic, as I said. Let me just give you an example of why it is. And I want to talk about, to warm this show up, I want to talk about the placebo effect. The placebo effect, as some of you know, is it's scientific verification that there is supernatural consciousness that exists within all of us. We're all told so often, especially by our experts in the universities, that there is no reason to study parapsychology or ESP or, you know, telepathy and clairvoyance and telementation and things like this, because there's no evidence for any of this. This is just all junk and witchcraft and hocus pocus and all the little silly lay people in the world can study it, but the lofty and prestigious experts, they're not going to fiddle with it because it's beyond them. You know, it's really funny that they do that because I was just reading the other day about how Merck, the huge drug company, they were having a problem with sales back in 2002, and they started to develop a new drug, and they which they were really excited about. They thought it was going to bring their sales back up to where they wanted it to be. So they started doing the trials for the drug, and what they would do is what every other drug company does, is they would have two groups that they would give the substance to. One group they would give a sugar pill to, and then the other group they would give the actual drug. And what's supposed to happen is the group that gets the fake pill, the water pill or the sugar pill, that's called the placebo group, nothing's supposed to happen to them. They're told they're given the drug, but they're actually given just nothing. And so they're therefore supposed to have show no visible effects because they're not getting the supposed help of the drug that's being developed by this drug company. So the placebo group got the their placebo, and then the group that got the drug got the drug. And what happened was is the placebo group performed better than the group that had the drug. Okay? So there's a lot of there's a lot in that story. I could almost cover 2 hours just hashing out all the details in that story. Just from anything from the fact that the drug probably brought down the mental power and the health, the physical health of the people who were taking it, and that's why they performed worse. But more interestingly, the simple belief of the people in the placebo group helped them in healing. It brought healing. Okay, that's what we call telementation. That's what I've written in my $9 book, telementation. That's really, in essence, all it is. This is what people that study religion call magical thinking. This is, we talked in past shows about the rain dance. The American Indians would, they would perform a ritual where they would, where the ritual was supposed to be to cause rain to happen. They would appease to the religious powers to allow rain to happen. But what it's possibly the case that they were doing was, is that their belief was in place. So it caused the rain. Belief, mental, the mental power of psychological belief causes the physical universe, the subatomic particles of the physical universe to react and arrange as belief dictates. That's why fear causes horrific states of devastation, and that's why optimism breeds optimism. In football, they often say success breeds success. Okay, that's just more telementation. Telementation is everything. That's all our consciousness is. It's all any of us have ever been doing. We just have never noticed it because we've been told otherwise. We've been told that fatalism is true. We're just sort of thrown and pushed around by the forces of life, and there's nothing we can do about it. Well, that's false. Okay, and our ancestors knew it was false. And this issue about the placebo group tells exactly how parapsychological studies, such as faith healing or clairvoyance or whatnot, are scientific. They could be. We've got the company Merck here, who actually did a study, and the results showed parapsychological effects. But what did we do? Did it make much of the news? Nope. Did the university professors focus on it? Nope. And what do? They say, oh, there's no evidence for any of this parapsychology. There's no any evidence for any of this spiritual power deep within you. Okay? You see how it's all a game? It's all made up. It's all a joke. I mean, science is, in our country, in our world culture, is not really science. Okay? It's some ideas and a lot of political propaganda and political money behind them. Okay, we could make parapsychology ultra-scientific now, right overnight, if we just had people focusing on it. But we're not doing it, so therefore people get on TV and say, oh, it's, you know, all those silly people who study parapsychology. So it's frustrating to me to discuss that because it's such a horrible trick. Because we're taught from when we're young that the people we're supposed to trust, university professors, for example, are, you know, that's who we're supposed to trust, but those are the very people who are misleading us, is the example I just gave, told you. Go watch that Conehead video I just mentioned on antimatterradio.com, and you'll see there also how the experts are misleading us. Now, I don't think it's, you know, they're all getting together in a room and purposely trying to mislead us. I think it's, they don't even know that they're doing it. You know, these people are not even sitting. I mean, take your average university professor. She or he doesn't sit down and think, you know, what do I need to do to really get to the truth? No, they're sitting there thinking, oh, I need to publish these papers. I need to pick up the kids from school on time. I need to get my grant. I need to make sure I beat up my competition and make sure my lab runs right and make sure that I grade my quizzes on time for my three classes I'm teaching. I mean, you see, so they're not even knowing what they're doing. All they're doing is just reacting, unfortunately, because they're too busy. That's why I like what I'm doing now with radio. I don't have to react. I can sit back and think about the big picture, everything. I'm like Immanuel Kant in his tower in his university that he worked at for decades. And that's all he did. He could just sit back and think about it all. And that's what we should all be doing. That's what our American Indian ancestors were able to do. Okay, that's what Henry David Thoreau wrote about when he observed the Indians back in the 1800s. He saw that they had so much leisure time compared to white Europeans, as we discussed on last week's show. That's where spirituality comes from. Okay, that's why the monks and monasteries go and sit there and do nothing. You know, they'll make wine and sweep up and, you know, do little things here and there, but they have lots of time where they just sit and meditate. Okay, because that's that silence, that incredibly loud silence, deafening silence of meditation, is where the spiritual source is found and lived through. Okay, so now that I've began this show with a hardcore scientific example, and I want to base this whole show on that bedrock, I want to tell you that what religion is, plain and simple, is the power of the subconscient plane, the power of the inner consciousness, the subconsciousness. I don't want to use the word subconsciousness because people instantly think of Freud and all the stuff he said. Now, Freud is pretty interesting, but I don't want to be put in that box that I'm talking in his terms, okay? The subconscient plane is what all of you are, okay? As we've talked about in past shows, most of you don't know that because you're living, your consciousness is stuck in the egotistical domain, the ego. Okay, but that's not really, that's the false self, the fake self, as we'll talk about next week in the first show on Eastern religion that we're going to go over. So religion is the power of the subconscient plane controlling and breathing through human activity wherein humans create a world to live in. That's what religion is. Okay? Now, that's very important that we get that across because it's a little different than that definition of religion that we're going to talk about here in a second that our experts, our academics give us, which they talk about it as being ritual symbol behavior, which is very interesting. But I think when I look at the actual religions, when I look at what Saul on the road to Damascus, you know, when he collapsed in the light of the vision of the light of God, when I think about the American Indians in their sweat lodges and their peyotism, everybody knows what peyotism is. That's the peyote religion of the American Indians, where they go into 30-hour trances, listening to the specific drumming. Do you wonder why they do that drumming like that? Go read a book about drumming. I've got a couple here on my shelf. The Healing Power of the Drum is one. So, and there's a couple others. That drumming creates super consciousness. It's like, it almost acts like a psychedelic, like a psilocybin mushroom or mescaline, all these spiritual psychedelic substances. These are not, I know in our culture, TV tells us that these are drugs. These are narcotics, addictive substances like alcohol, like beer or something. If you took them, if you ingested peyote, for example, you would quickly understand that that is a lie. That's another lie that our TV and our newspapers tell us. Okay? These substances are so incredibly spiritual that you have to be prepared for them before you go on the journey that they take you. Okay, so anyways, back to the peyotism and the ecstasy of the American Indians in their religious rituals. That's what religion is all about. Okay, I mean, if I read the ancient Hindu texts and hear about all their trance ceremonies, their meditation, their self-mutilation that they would carry out, their asceticism, where they would starve themselves and do all kinds of things to cause incredible torment upon themselves in order to get past their attachment to physical comfort, get past their attachment to their body, to get to, because if you do, you get to beyond the state of being beyond life and death. And when you get to the state of being beyond life and death, that's being at this power of the subconscient plane that I was just talking about. Okay? When we talk about Eastern religion next week, we'll talk a lot about the specific mechanics of how consciousness is structured. But let's just leave it right now is that there's this right underneath your egotistical self that you think is real but which is false, which is typically what all of you have only known through your lives and which is not really what you are. Underneath that is a super consciousness which is filled with incredible joy. Once you taste it, you'll never want to go back and you'll want to devote your life to meditation and technologies that destroy your egotistical self and put you on your genuine super consciousness that you are. Because you'll never experience happier moments than that. You'll always want to be there, as we've talked about in past shows. Okay, so the super conscious subconscient plane, Okay, so we call it subconsciousness, but we also call it superconsciousness. So typically in our culture, we think that we have like stages of consciousness. There's inner consciousness, a subconsciousness, and then regular consciousness. And it's assumed that the subconsciousness, the inner consciousness, is sort of less real, is just make-believe and magic and imagination. And the more proper consciousness is the one above that, more lofty than that, more correct than that. That's what's called the ego in Jungian and Freudian terms, and often many modern-day researchers use the same terms. However, in this show, we consider it the opposite. We consider that the deeper inward you go, the more real consciousness becomes, the more aware of what you are, you become. So then the more outer levels of consciousness, the more egotistical, are the least real. Okay, so when you go into this super conscious plane, there's a lot of activity in there that you typically don't know of. Let's take for example your dreams. That's a sort of emanation, a low level emanation, and from your subconscious plane, from your super consciousness. These images that you get in your dreams, it is typically just assumed and demanded by our experts in academia and elsewhere on television and so forth, that these dreams are just make-believe. It's just the mind's processing of the day's activities before, or perhaps processing about worries on the upcoming day, you know, tomorrow. And there's nothing special about them. Most of them are just mush. Most of them are just mental junk. I remember sitting in, I had a very nice fellow when I was getting my undergrad degree at the University of New Mexico in anthropology. I had a very nice fellow in the biology department named Paul, who was nice enough to take me on for a year to do an independent study under him, studying the evolution of the brain and evolution of consciousness. And I remember him telling me that all that inner subconscious stuff that you witness in dreams and meditation and so forth, all these images, this film studio that's inside your head, that's all just, that's kind of like, he compared it to a computer. It's sort of just like the inner workings and scrambled nature of what a computer does and its inner processing. That's what that is. See, that could be true, but the problem is that that's an assumption. A huge assumption. And I'm sad to say that that's a lot of what we get out of academia these days, just a lot of non-empirical, theoretical myth-making or story-telling like that example right there. That's a lot of what academia is giving us, unfortunately. We all are familiar with this myth-making they give us about how telling us that carbon is bad for us. Carbon dioxide is this poisonous gas that's so bad for the earth and for everything else. Okay, there's more myth-making, and the TVs don't help us too much because they won't talk about the Coneheads video on antimatterradio.com, right on the front page there. They won't talk about the placebo effect experiment, which basically proves parapsychological activity in just very straightforward scientific terms. They won't talk about that, but they'll talk about carbon all day, how evil this carbon gas is that... And they'll never tell you, that's what the plants need to breathe in, and that's what our bodies are made of. Carbon is the basis of life. So, needs to say, if you get your information from the television, you're in bad shape. So anyway, let's get back to talking about the images in the subconscious inner plane of superconsciousness. We have to, ask a different question? Rather than assume that these images are just nothing, and often they are correlated to daily life. For example, Plexico Burris, the football player, went to prison a few days ago, as we all know, and I was very, very preoccupied with that story. In fact, Infowars.com published a story. They ran a story that I wrote on that, And I had spent a couple days really thinking a lot about that. And needless, unsurprisingly, I had a number of dreams about prisons and how scary they are. And I used to work in one, of course. When I taught for the university, I would teach in one, as some of you know. That's how I lost my job, which is another story. So yeah, there is correlation. But then there's also these cases where there's absolutely no correlation at all. And all these fantastical creatures that are found in many of our dreams and our daydreams or our, when a lot of us who do meditation, you'll find this film studio like a dream state within you right underneath the surface. You'll find that in your meditation. I remember when I first started paying attention to my dreams back in the early 90s, I had this most spectacular dream of a blue dragon chasing me down a hall. In an underground building, and I thought it was chasing me, but when it caught up to me, it ran past me. It was not chasing me. This beautiful blue dragon. And dragons have an incredible significance in all religion. That is a huge understatement I just made. We're going to talk about that extensively in this series on the nature of religion. The dragon could be the most important creature in religion. It could be that if God exists, God looks like a dragon. It could be the case that if angels exist, angels are dragons. Now, some of you listening might not understand that, but as we talked about it on the Young Earth show when James Nienhuis was on the show, that's the seraphims listed in the Bible are angels that are dragons. And the Chinese dragon is sort of a guardian angel and so forth. We'll talk about that more later. But so we've got these images that come in our dreams and in our hypnagogia. That's another conscious state, which I'll discuss what that means later. In our meditation, there's this inner subconscious film. And if you really pay attention to your dreams, you'll find out that some of your dreams are foretelling the future. For example, about a year and a half ago, there was a big fire. Probably a lot of you won't remember this because it wasn't the most significant news story, but it was the top headline news story for a half a day. There was a huge fire in the top half of a hospital building in London. And a few days before this fire, I had a dream that in Chicago, the top half of a hospital building was on fire. And in my dream, I had a very clear view of these building. I had a very clear picture of what it was in my mind in the dream, unbelievably clear. Okay, and it was at the same time of the, well, what time of day and everything. And I remember in my dreams thinking, well, that really looks more like Europe, because I've been to Europe several times. And so anyways, a couple days later, I noticed that in London, the top half of and in my dream also, by the way, terrorists caused the fire. Okay. Now, then a couple days later, there was a fire in the top half of a building in London. And now the news told us it was started by some other source than terrorists. But I had a reason to question that when I looked into the story very deeply. Now, and also we have to wonder who the terrorists are. Those of you who have studied the New World Order and listen to some of my shows or listen to Alex Jones and other shows on the New World Order know that the real terrorists aren't who you're told who they are on TV. So, but anyways, when I went and looked up in the news this story of a London hospital burning, I found, to my astonishment, that when I looked at the building in the news pictures, it was exactly the same picture as in my dream two nights before. Okay, now I've had this sort of thing happen often. Lots of things like this. There's all kinds of religious things going on that we'll talk about in this show on the nature and philosophy of religion. So if you start paying attention to your dreams, you'll notice things like that happening. So this instantly takes us out of the idea that the dream state, the dreaming and this inner superconscious film that we have is just simply the product of inner mental mush and processing of the day's activities and the egotistical consciousness's activities. That assumption is not a good assumption. It is a little bit pathetic. Okay. It leads us to, I could say a whole lot more about these images, but we have to start wondering, what are all these images? Where do they come from? So if I'm looking at a book here, I'm holding in my hand, by Paul von Ward. This is a possible future guest on this show in the next coming months after we finish this series on religion. The book is called God, Genes, and Consciousness, page 17. He entertains the idea that a lot of these images in our consciousness that we experience in dreams and meditation and so forth, and also psychedelic usage, are actually images from our ancestors. Okay? So now we have a third possibility. We've got all kinds of possibilities now. To sum it all up, our inner subconscious plane is a sea of images. And just go practice meditation or pay attention to dreams or eat some peyote in a peyote ceremony. You'll see exactly what I mean if you don't understand what I mean. And now we've got all kinds of questions about why do these images come to us? When they come to us, it's not like we control them always. So we can in some ways. That's called telementation. That's called the law of attraction. But a lot of times they kind of just come to us and go at their own pace, and they race about through us, and all of a sudden we'll just be there with an image in our mind of a field, say. And you say to yourself, why all of a sudden did this image in my dream state or in my meditation or in my daydreaming? See, you have to be paying attention to your consciousness to notice this film. If you're not paying attention, you won't notice it. You'll just notice the outer world. Okay, we'll talk about that next week. So you wonder, why did that image of that field just come into my consciousness? And there is no known explanation, but what it seems to be the case is that these images could be coming from many sources. And there are many different streams of imagery going through your super consciousness. And the people who practice and are experts on remote viewing, probably a topic many of you who listen to this show are familiar with, know that there's also a stream of inside of you which is absolutely clairvoyant. There's a conscious stream of consciousness, a very specific river of images, which is absolutely clairvoyant. So in other words, I could have my wife in the other room. I could be talking to my wife in the room, and I could say, I'm going to leave the room. I want you to take that cup sitting on the dresser there, and I want you to put something in it. And I'm going to go carry out some meditation in the office a few rooms over in our house. And I'm going to, through my super consciousness, find the psychic stream, which is absolutely clairvoyant, and I'm going to form images of what's in that cup, and I'm going to see what's in that cup. And I'm going to come back in this room, and I'm going to be able to tell you what's in that cup before seeing it. And you know what? It works. Now, that's called remote viewing. It's a very popular topic, so a lot of listeners of the show probably know all about it. However, remote viewing, I will tell you, in my opinion, is difficult if you are not an experienced meditator. I would not try to start remote viewing. Well, I take that back, because I have had some students that have been able to have almost instant success with remote viewing and with helmetation. But I find it probably better to get started some basic meditation and telementation first, in my opinion, before you start remote viewing. It'll make remote viewing easier later. But anyway, the point here is we have all these streams of psychical consciousness. And this is where the power of religion comes from. Okay, you wonder why our hunter-gatherers around the world decorate themselves in all this ornamentation, masks and feathers and body paint and body modification and scarification and all this. You wonder why they do that? Because their consciousness is, unlike ours, living and emanating the superconscious religious inner plane that all of you really are. Okay, their life is this super consciousness. Unlike us, we have an egotistical consciousness. We're concerned with material possessions and television shows and Sunday church services and junk food. Okay, they're not. They're living. That's living outwardly, as we'll talk about in detail next week on the Eastern Religion Show number one. Our ancestors and our hunter-gatherer friends in the world today show us how if you separate yourself from this materialism of our culture and live with the anti-materialism, the anti-matter philosophy, the subconscious superconsciousness breaks forth within you and the ecstasy of that domain starts to become your life. Okay, so that brings us to another issue. The superconsciousness of the inner, which religion comes from, is ecstasy. Okay, and what religion specifically is a technology or set of technologies to bring forth ecstasy. Now, a lot of times people say, no, that's not the definition of religion. That's the definition of shamanism. Okay, well, that's fine. I happen to disagree with that, so I'm not going to include that in this show on the nature and philosophy of religion. When I look at the religions of the world, whether it's the pilgrims marching around Mecca, marching around that square, black square box with a meteorite inside of it, okay, or whether it's the Tibetan Buddhists meditating to their huge gongs that they hit, or meditating to the sound of Om, which some researchers have said is the sound of the sun. I think tend to agree that that's true. We can talk about that later. No matter what it is, if it's Saul on the road to Damascus in the Bible, falling to the ground in a light, in a vision of the light of God, these are all ecstasy. These are all bliss. These are all ecstatic activity. Yeah, that's what all religion is. Okay, there is. It's not. See, what our experts in the universities have been telling us is that no, religion is about belief states, and it's about this belief, and then creating symbols based on these beliefs. I have a different opinion, and I hold that religion is about creating ecstasy, and the images and symbolic. Masks and cross, masks and with the hunter-gatherers and crosses with Christianity and so forth. These are all the images from the superconsciousness of the inner subconscious plane, of the inner subconsciousness, the divine realm, which is what the divine realm is your inner superconsciousness. Okay, that's why in that's why in 1 Corinthians 3, verse 9, it says that you are the house of God. Okay? Right there. I mean, we know what that verse says? That says, you are heaven. The human being is heaven. Because that's what the house of God is. Heaven. Wow. That's a little different than what I heard in my church services growing up, where I was told how sinful I am, how I needed to give the money to the churches, these big churches. They had rich pastors. And I was supposed to believe this and that, and if I didn't, I was going to burn in hell and be tortured for a million years or for eternity or something. And that's a little bit different, thinking about 1 Corinthians 3:9. No, I'm a piece of heaven, is what I am. Or I am heaven in its entirety. And I already knew that. I didn't need to hear that in the Bible. Because I've been a Buddhist since the early 1990s, and Buddhist meditations gets you right there. Gets you right to that point, that inner fire, the inner Brahmanic state, where you realize that you are ecstasy. That's what a human is. That's what nature is. And you always have been. And there's nothing else that exists except ecstasy. Okay? And when people forget this, that's when you have things like war. That's when you have things like the New World Order. That's when you have things like the mass media in our country and all this fear over this flu shot and all this. Okay, that's forgetting, to put it in Buddhist terminology, that's forgetting that you are the fire of heaven. Okay? So, in this show on the philosophy and nature of religion, we conclude very confidently that religion is the technology of ecstasy. Therefore, it's the most important subject there is, because the most power a human ever will acquire is through ecstasy, bliss, and meditation. The most happiness a human ever acquires through that. The most love, kindness, and intelligence, wisdom, knowledge a human ever will acquire is also through spiritual ecstasy. So there really is nothing else to do. I mean, of course, we're all going to. But we should make this our primary focus in life, as our ancestors did. Okay, I'm staring at a book right in front of me called The Shaman's Secret, The Lost Resurrection Teachings of the Ancient Maya by Douglas Gillette. Okay, now this is about the ancient Maya, who were shaman kings. The leaders of the ancient in the ancient Mayan world were completely obsessed with generating ecstasy. Now, as we'll talk about, there's a light and a dark side to religion. Okay, and the Mayans were on the dark end. Okay, that's why they had all their human sacrifice and so forth. Okay, the whole world from the present till maybe 2000 BC or something, has been very dark and painful. As we talked about in Walter Crutton, when Walter Crutton was on the show, that basically the world has been in kind of a dark age that whole time. And what he calls the descending cycle, okay, descending from the Golden Age back to Sumeria and before to where we are now. Now we're apparently just starting an upswing. We're about to take a huge swing upward in 2012. But, so anyway, we'll get back to how the Mayans were on the dark path. There's a reason in Star Wars that they talk about the light and the dark side. I've just come to realize in the last few years that that's really true. There is a light and a dark side. We'll talk about that more later. But anyway, the ancient Maya, our American Indian ancestors, the ancient Hindus, the Buddhists, Christians, the Essenes, the Celts, our shamanic heritages from Siberia to Africa to Native America to South America to present day shamanic practices everywhere. These are all technologies of ecstasy. Okay, now what is ecstasy? Ecstasy is about divinity, light, and magic. Okay? Magic is being able to shape the world by your consciousness. Light is the ultimate power that makes up everything. And divinity is the holiness that light emanates and which you are filled with and can see in existence when you develop your religious technologies of ecstasy to the point where you see that it's not the case that matter is real. It's not the case that all these physical surfaces and colors around you are what's really real. There's something all around you, inside all of those material entities, and it's called spiritual light or religious light. That's what ecstasy is all about. And, of course, it's about happiness as the word ecstasy implies, but happiness is sort of a difficult term to use. It's so overused in our culture, and people associate happiness with sitting on the couch with their feet up, enjoying a beer and 10 hours of Seinfeld or something. Now, that may be fun for you and relaxing, but what we're talking about in this show is orders of magnitude different than that. And if you don't understand what I mean by that, well, then that's just simply because you've never entered into the super consciousness in any way, even tasted its surface or felt its surface, let alone dip into it to some degree. Okay, so the academics discuss religion in a little bit different terms than I'm discussing. And like I said, the reason I developed these discussions of religion as I do is because I'm just trying to take exactly what I see religion as being and then describe it to you. Okay, so that's why I've got a little bit different description and discussion of religion than the experts do, because I think that they're a little bit lost in the world of ideas, like I've already said. So the major religions are Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Judaism. Am I forgetting anything? Islam, I said. Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity. Yeah, and then there's shamanism. Okay. Shamanism is typically thought of as being the religion of the hunter-gatherers and the primitive people engage in. Christianity is, you know what Christianity is. Hinduism and Buddhism are often thrown into the same group and focused on largely in Asia. Of course, that's moving to our country in a huge way now. Now, these definitions are handy and nice, but I'm going to disregard them in a lot of ways in our show. Because I'm going to treat all religions as basically the same, and I've got good reason for doing that, such as they all tell the same. If you go read religions, their religious texts all tell the same stories. Okay, so we'll get to that in a minute. But there's many other religions in addition to what I just read. There's what are called the major religions, and then there are the minor religions, such as, for example, a minor religion is Satanism, or Rastafarianism, or Wicca, or ufology. And so forth. Ufology is an important one. We'll get back to that, exactly why it is in a minute. Ufology is called UFO religions, the worship of UFO riding extraterrestrials. Okay? That's an important one, as we'll see in just a few minutes. Now, the word religion comes from religio, and that means to bind and so forth. I'm not going to describe religion in that way, however, as our experts do. As I've already discussed, religion is the power and ecstasy of the superconsciousness within. That's my definition of, as I've already said. So our experts discuss religion as being about ritual symbol behavior. They take our ancestors and religious people of the world to be having certain beliefs, spiritual beliefs, and then creating little symbols beyond them and then worshiping them and creating little rituals based on these symbols. So the Christians will have a little cross and then make up a story about a man who rose from the dead, and then they'll worship the whole thing or something. Okay. So I think our experts treat religion a little bit like it's just a silly little immature game. Now, I can see why they do that, because they come from and are sold by this idea of science. Now, I've always wondered why our experts in universities do this, because if you look closely at science, our current version of science that we have is not really doing much for us. It's not describing and making many predictions, and it's not really explaining much. It'll do a lot of explaining, but if you match the explanation to reality, it won't do it. I've had a lot of comments about the Intelligent Design show that we were, I think it was June 30. It's in the archives at antimatterradio.com. You can go listen to it. But the Intelligent Design show, I've had a lot of emails about that show and people criticizing me for being so horribly unscientific, and then I'll email them back or whatnot, and I'll say, well, okay, thanks for telling me I'm unscientific. Could you please tell me exactly how I'm being unscientific? And not a single time yet have they. What they do is they just say, people are just telling me, oh, there's the experts say this, and you can't say that they're not explaining things, because they are explaining things, and they say they're explaining things, so I can't say they're not explaining things. And all the alternative explanation that we discussed in the Intelligent Design Show has to be wrong. And then I'll email back and say, okay, that's great, but can you please specifically tell me what they're explaining, how they're explaining it, and how I'm wrong and not explaining it the same way? And nobody will answer me. Okay? That's because when you meet people in academia, they're living in the world of ideas, not in the world of the empirical. They'll tell you that they're living in the world of the empirical, but if you just quiz them a little bit, you'll find out that they're actually not. The world of the empirical is when you match what you see in the world with your theories, when what the world is doing creates your theories. Now, when you live in the world of ideas, what you do is you create theories and then construct the ideas of the world around the theories. For example, you construct the idea that carbon dioxide is an evil gas and it's so harmful, then you'll go and do your science with this presumption that carbon dioxide is bad, so then all your conclusions and studies will have that assumption in mind, and you'll never get beyond this fake idea that carbon is so harmful for us. Okay, that's a good example right there. So anyway, I can understand a little bit why our professionals and academics do that, because, well, I've already explained why. So what I take, well, one thing that our experts say is that they say religion is also, in addition to ritual symbol behavior, is they say religion is the way of life of a culture. Now, that I agree with completely. That we are, because I mean, that if I simply look at, let's take Islam, very, very spiritual, religious set of cultures over there in the Middle East, and then, of course, here in America, all over the world. But say, let's say focused, and it has its focus point in the Middle East of the world. Their whole life over there is the spiritual religious quest of Islam. I mean, Islam is such an incredible religion. You read the Quran and it's absolutely obsessed with discussion of the ecstasy of this religious light of God. It's absolutely incredible. Just like the Bible. Except I'd say even more discussion of it. So, but anyways, now I have to write something down here so I make sure I don't forget it to mention in a second. Okay, so I do agree that that's, when you look at the religions of the world, Buddhism, shamanism, Hinduism, Islam, and so forth, religion will dominate a person's life in a culture, so therefore it would dominate the culture, and it becomes the way of life. So religion is way of life. Okay? Now, so if that's true, that unfortunately means that in America here, we are an irreligious culture, because we don't live our lives according to religion. We live our lives according to going to work and watching TV in general and eating junk food. Okay, that's what you might say. Oh no, that's not all we do. Well, if you add up the hours of the day, looking at what people are actually doing, their lives are dominated by that. Yeah, sure, they may have 20 minutes where they talk to their kid, or, you know, 13 minutes where they kick the dog around or something. But if you look at the bulk of the time of their life, it's made up of watching TV, eating junk food, and going to work. Okay, it's not spent meditating, prayer, eating peyote, more prayer, and having ecstatic trance listening to drumming. Okay, you see the difference here? Okay, the people in the Islamic cultures do have all kinds of intensive prayer throughout the day. They do have spiritual exercises throughout the day. Same in the Buddhist cultures, to a degree. But here in America, we have it to a lesser degree, and we are a culture obsessed with materialism. I don't think I'm saying anything controversial here. I think it's just true. Just look around. Okay, look at what your neighbor's doing. They're concerned with TV and the mall. and, you know, their checkbook. So, unfortunately, if that's what a religion is defined as our way of life, we are despiritualized, irreligious, really atheistic culture in America. It's funny, I wrote in my book Corporatism that I published a couple years ago how people in America would often criticize the communists as being atheistic. But actually, if you look at America, they are, because they're absolutely the only spiritual practice the typical American will get, if even this, is they will go to some church service where they'll get a 10-15 minute sermon every Sunday. Probably will listen to maybe half of it, maybe daydream through a bunch of it. And the church sermon will basically tell you, you need to believe that Jesus is God and then everything else is fine. So they don't focus on ecstatic trance or the Holy Spirit, you know, feeling the Holy Spirit and so forth. So, like I said, I think it's pretty safe to say that America is irreligious, despiritualized, and atheistic. Unfortunately, that's maybe why we're having so many problems. Divorce and poverty and war, apathy, confusion. 20% of the country's on Ritalin or antidepressants or something. You've got a big mess here. And that's perhaps why. Okay. Of course, yes, other cultures have big messes, but go look at the crime rate in Japan compared to ours, and you find out that America's got a lot of crime, not as much as some countries anymore, like England and Australia, for example. When they banned private ownership of firearms by citizens, their crime rate skyrocketed. So America no longer is of the Western countries. They no longer have the highest crime rate, which they used to. But I found it interesting that they used to have the highest crime rate back in the 1990s, you know, 1985, 95, in there. I often thought that it was associated with our despiritualized existence. But I'm not sure. That's just a theory. I'd have to look into that more. So religion, in by experts, often thought of as certain kind of belief in fake things, like fake gods and fake magical thinking. This is what they say. Let me read you the definition of religion from dictionary.com. There's a couple definitions. Let me read number one. A set of beliefs concerning the cause, nature, and purpose of the universe, especially when considered as the creation of superhuman agency or agencies, usually involving devotional or ritual observances and often containing a moral code governing the conduct of human affairs. Okay. That is exactly why we have this show. Because nothing about that definition is true. Okay, the first part of the definition says religion is a set of beliefs concerning the cause, nature, and purpose of the universe. Okay, now there may be in a religion a set of beliefs about the cause, nature, and purpose of religion, but that is basically never the focal point of the religion. The focal point of the religion is always ecstatic trance, ecstatic bliss of the superconsciousness. In some religions, like take Tibetan Buddhism, to my knowledge, they didn't even think the universe has a cause or purpose or beginning or anything. So there's a religion that doesn't even fit into this. I mean, it's a major religion. Doesn't even fit into this definition. Okay, so there's just so many problems with this definition. You know, they talk about the moral code. I mean, there's nothing in this definition that talks about the ecstatic trance that Saul on the road to Damascus had. Okay, what about the religious solitude that Jesus had 40 days in the desert? Okay, dealing with the underworld dragon, Satan. Okay, what about Buddha's visit with the underworld god of the underworld, Mara, before he reached his enlightenment? What about the ecstasy of nirvana? Okay, there's nothing about this. I mean, the whole point, let's take Buddhism, the whole point of Buddhism is the ecstatic trance of nirvana. That's really not a very good definition of it, but it'll do for right now. The whole point of Christianity, from my reading of the Bible, is to realize that there is a supposed to be some sort of interrelationship, interrelatedness, a relation between yourself, that is your consciousness, and the Holy Spirit. Now, if that would be, there's only, if that happens, there's only one possibility, and that is an ecstatic trance also. Because you can't have your consciousness grasp the Holy Spirit and have that be a humdrum experience. That's going to be ecstasy. That's the whole point. Okay, so we just talked about two major religions. The whole point of the religion is ecstasy, and this dictionary.com definition doesn't even mention any of it. Okay, it mentions all these side issues that are not even involved in all the religions. Okay, so let's go to definition two on dictionary.com. A specific fundamental set of beliefs and practices generally agreed on by persons, by a number of persons or sects. Okay, that's all the same problems. It's focused on beliefs. And they say practices, what they mean. I know what they mean by the word practices there. They mean, you know, rituals, like the ritual of going to church and taking communion, or the ritual of the shaman playing with a snake and or something like that. So, again, nothing about ecstasy, nothing about the light of heaven, nothing about the superconsciousness, nothing about the inner images of the subconscious domain, nothing, 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 just all about belief. See, this is written by academics. Our academics think that religion is only belief. They think they're, even though we just talked about the start of this show, the first thing I brought up was the placebo effect experiment. Proves, or I mean, let's just say it gives incredible scientific basis to the existence of the power of the superconsciousness in the terms, the scientific terms that the academics like to use, the experts like to use. Okay? But unfortunately, these experiments are not done because the universities are too busy building bombs and so forth, like we've talked about on the show before. So the experts think that they're not aware that there is this power of the superconsciousness, and therefore they think religion is actually nothing. It's just a set of superstitions. And so that's why these dictionary definitions are written this way. That's why it's a tragedy when we go to universities. It's hard for us to believe that all these experts are wrong. But the simple fact is that the placebo experiment that I keep referring to proves that they're wrong. It shows enormous evidence for there being a domain of the superconsciousness, which is what religion comes from, as all the religious books show us. Okay? One thing I forgot to say is there's one more thing that religion is before we continue on to this dictionary.com definition, set of definitions. One more thing religion is a set of history books. Okay, if you read the Hindu, ancient Hindu texts, or the ancient Christian texts, and so forth. They tell stories of history, which are specifically different than the stories of history that our scientists and our academic experts give us. What our scientific experts tell us is that there was a Big Bang, and the universe expanded, galaxies formed, stars and planets formed, and on some of the planets, structure formed, and some of the structure is life, and out of the life emerged complex beings, such as humans, animals, insects, and so forth, and they got more and more sophisticated, and about 2,000 years ago, they started to become real sophisticated so they could build cities and so forth, and now they're at their most sophisticated point now, and they can build nuclear bombs and skyscrapers and television sets. They're at their pinnacle right now. Okay, that's basically what the university view of reality is in the most simplest possible terms. Now, the world religions are unified and all tell the same story, but it is a very different story than that. What they say is, there were times in the past where humans were more advanced, had higher technology than we have now, had much higher religious powers than we have now. We can't even understand the religious powers now. Had direct communication with God, angels, and supernatural beings. And that all fell apart and went into a dark age, and now we're ascending from the dark age. Okay. So now, as we've talked about on past shows, the archaeological record does not support the scientific view. It supports the view of the religions. Okay, I'm not going to go through that all again now. You can go through it all in the archives on antimatterradio.com because we point out the specific archaeology that points all that out. Okay? So, in general, our history books, our history lessons in the religions also tell another thing. There's many stories of two classes of spiritual beings. The spiritual beings are apparently all around us. And there's two classes of them often. There's a good side and a bad side, and they're at war. Okay, Christianity exemplifies this better probably than any religion, because they have heaven and hell. So often there's another thing that the religions often have is a reptilian element. Well, there'd be a class of dragon creatures, or like in China, for example, the dragon race is sort of like guardian angels. They're wonderful creatures. In Christianity, however, you've got the demonic, snake-like, dragon-like, monster-like creatures, which are horrific underworld entities. And now the religions say that these creatures are all around us all the time. Right now, apparently. They're trans-dimensional. Unlike our egotistical consciousness, which only can see one dimension, these creatures are trans-dimensional. And are therefore out of our visible light spectrum. And more specifically, they're out of the spectrum of our egotistical consciousness. We have to develop a higher consciousness, such as with meditation, and those creatures will appear, according to the religions. And I've discussed on past shows, well, I'll just say it, that is true. That's exactly what happens. Okay? So, in general, the religions tell the same story. Like we've talked about in past shows, the flood story keeps showing up in religions all over the place. The story of a fall of humans, where they descended from basically living with God in this lofty state that I just referred to falling to a state of ignorance. That's falling to the egotistical state. Falling away from the high technology, the spiritual technologies, to states of war, hunger, ignorance, and so forth. Okay, now here's one of my favorite things. All the religions refer to an ultimate power of reality, and that ultimate power is always light, no matter what religion you're talking about. If it's Freemasonry, Satanism, Buddhism, Christianity, whatever. I mean, Christianity, it's kind of interesting. I mean, in the Bible, they'll refer to God as light and Lucifer as light in the same book, which is kind of, I'm not really sure what to think about that one, so I'm not going to make any more comment, but that's something peculiar there. But anyways, the ultimate divine power is always light, such as Saul on the road to Damascus. Okay, so we can keep going, but, I mean, there's angels, here's another thing that religions always involve. They involve the story of creatures from the sky, from the stars of the sky, coming to Earth and creating humans, either out of the dirt or out of other animals or just out of, from nothing. I mean, sorry, from just spare pieces and whatnot, and creating them to do various things, either be slaves to the gods or just live on their own or be friends to God or gods or angels. And often, such as in the Bible, since this is outlined very well, the spiritual creatures, the heavenly creatures, the creatures from the stars, often would help humans, to give them, develop crops for them, make literally and genetically design the crops, and then show them how to cultivate them. This is in the religions all over the place. It's the same story, and it's specifically different than the scientific story. Now, the scientific story has no explanation for humans. Now, I know they tell you Darwinism and evolution, but we've talked about in Antimatter Radio shows number 1 and 2, the specific problems why that theory has to be abandoned. So they don't have anything on that. They basically have lots of unanswered questions. We're supposed to just believe that we just showed up a couple hundred thousand years ago as Homo sapiens sapiens, and before that we were monkeys 5 million years ago. And the fossil evidence they have in between is pretty much a joke. And the DNA evidence is also not there, as we discussed on the first two editions of the Antimatter Radio Show back in April and May. So that's why we consider all the religions the same. Now, remember this, because this is going to come up as an important issue here in a few minutes when we really get going. So let's just talk a little bit. Well, I think I'm done with this dictionary.com set of definitions. I think we made the point here. So let's just follow where with what I'm talking about right now. I want to talk about what's called ufology. Okay, ufology is UFO religions, as we've discussed. Now, what I want to say here to you is that every single religion in the world that's ever existed, including religions like Taoism and so forth, are forms of ufology. Okay. Now let's discuss this a little bit. Ufology means UFO religion. And from what I just said, all the religions involve creatures coming from the sky. Basically something like an extraterrestrial. It's something that was not on Earth, comes to Earth to create humans, and then is later worshipped. To create the crops that humans use, and then be taught how to use them, how to build structures and plant crops and so forth. And then they leave, and then they're worshipped. Okay, that's what the religion involves. Okay, so basically the religious creatures in the religious texts are extraterrestrial-like super beings. See, do you see why I'm so concerned with the Conehead skull, which the film on the front page of AntimatterRadio.com covers? Because this could be direct fossil evidence for the existence of these creatures. Okay, so now some of our oldest relics of religion, cave art, for example, from way, way back, paintings from the Renaissance and before, writings from the ancient Hindu texts, the writings in Ezekiel and all over the Bible. These art and these writings are obsessed with the idea that sky creatures came to Earth. They came on spaceships, they came on saucers, they came on clouds, they came in spheres and orbs. They came from the sky. They always come from the sky. They live in the sky. And they come here to Earth to do various different things, that whatever they do. Okay, so that's ufology, UFO religion, which is the worship of the sky creatures, the star creatures. Okay, so I've got a definition of ufology here. Let me read it. It's a belief system of a culture that there are aliens and or godlike creatures called star creatures who long ago came from the sky, created humans, taught humans how to farm and subsist, practice religions, and how to worship them. Okay, that's my definition of ufology. That is my definition of religion, and all the religions involve that story, whether it's Hinduism or Christianity or whatnot. Okay, do you see why I'm what's called a pluralist? Pluralist is one who believes that all religions are basically telling the same story. Because that's exactly what you get if you look at the religious texts. I know there's a huge desire among Christians to make sure that that they think that they're special and everybody else is going to hell. I mean, some Christians think that way. And I know that there are verses in the Bible, like Luke 19:27, for example. And there's verses all over Deuteronomy and so forth that seem to advocate this idea. But I am forced to abandon that idea because it is irrational, it is savage, and a loving God, like the God in the Gospel of Luke, would not advocate such an idea. There has to be some sort of explanation as to why that peculiarity exists in that specific text of that specific religion. Okay, so back to this idea of ufology. Basically, from this point forward, we're going to be discussing ufology. That's what religion is, as we've just said, so therefore that's what we're going to discuss. Okay, so all the world religions tell us down to the minute details these stories which all correlate. Okay, now I have heard, for example, that in Judaism, now I'm not an expert in Judaism or in Zulu religion. Okay, so this story I'm not an expert on, but I have heard, for example, that in Judaism, their creation story involves angels coming on a spaceship to Earth to create humans. And then in the Zulu religion, I think they said female angels came from Mars on a spaceship to create humans. Now, apparently, if you take the word that each Judaism and the Zulu religion gave to that spaceship, they have a specific name for it, which I don't have with me at this exact moment. It's a very complex, long, strange word, but it's only off by one letter. Okay? It doesn't seem to me that that could be a coincidence. So you have to wonder why all these religions have the same story worldwide, and why the archaeology, as we discussed in past shows, supports that story. You have to basically conclude that that story is true. And the story of reality that we're getting in our universities, on TV, and in our strange, silly churches we have these days is not the true story of world history. The true story of world history has been right in front of our face all the time in our religious texts. Okay, so basically what big religions like shamanism, Christianity, and Buddhism, and so forth, Hinduism are offshoots of this original movement, global, worldwide movement of ufology that existed sometime in the past. So the first religion, in other words, was ufology, because of some star creatures that came to our planet, or were in our presence, or somehow were here, and somehow we lived with, and somehow we saw them. Maybe they're still here now, and they're just transdimensional, and our consciousness is not with them. We'll talk about that idea more. That's probably what's going on. Okay, so our consciousnesses have to elevate in one of these Cruttendon cycles back to a golden age, and when we do, we'll have the consciousness to grasp that they were always here, and we just were lost. Okay, so anyway, the point is that there was this original time of ufology, this original movement of ufology, and all the religions like Taoism and Christianity and so forth spread from that. The words changed a little bit, but basically there still is just this one religion focused on the star creatures, these creatures from the sky, and the message of divine light and ecstasy that the star creatures talk about. Okay, so I mean, if you look at Bible verses like Ezekiel 1:4 and 1:15, or 2 Kings 2:11, Genesis 6:4, these are pretty amazing stories, which seem to support exactly what we're talking about here. So the oldest religion is ufology, and if we want to explore the actual history of the world and our actual destiny and past and nature as humans, we have to focus on the story of ufology, which is in all the world religions. We're not going to understand ourselves if we follow the monkey to man Darwinist theory. We're not going to understand ourselves if we go read psychology books. What that's going to do is make us more confused. What we need to know, we need to operate on the super level of the super consciousness within. That's how we'll understand ourselves to the best degree we possibly can. Okay, now, there is, like I just said a few minutes ago, some incredible evidence for the existence of these sky gods or star creatures coming. Now, first of all, this is confusing because on the one hand, there are star creatures that have come to our planet in the past, apparently, and apparently created us. Now, but on the other hand, okay, so, I mean, so they're lofty and godlike and so forth. But on the other hand, so are we. So what I gather this to be the case is that if you look at the Conehead skulls, for example, on the front page of antimatterradio.com, which are in museums all over the world, but not discussed by our academics here in America, they have brain cavities about twice the size of modern-day humans, Homo sapiens sapiens. Okay, so in accordance, this follows from past shows, but their receptacle, their brain, the brain receptacle, could do much more than ours could, so therefore it apparently is the case that they could realize and live on the plane of their superconsciousness more aptly than we Homo sapiens sapiens can. But nevertheless, we can also. So as it says in 1 Corinthians 3:9, just like they're the house of God, so are we. So on the one hand, they're revered, the sky creatures are revered, special, worshipped and whatnot, as all the religions discuss. But on the other hand, we're deep down in our inner superconscious core, we're just like them. Okay? So anyway, let's get back to the point here. There is some evidence, like we discussed, for the existence of these. The best is, of course, the Coneheads. And I've discussed them on past shows, so I'm not going to hear it. And you can go to watch that video I keep referring to on antimatterradio.com. But to my knowledge, that is some rock-solid proof. And our, if you go study that art of some of our ancestors' cultures, like the ancient Mayans, these were the kings. The cone heads were the kings. So pretty amazing stuff. Now, we've talked about the Dogon in the past, on past shows. There's more evidence. And also ancient structures around the world and the evidence of the super technology of the pyramids and Baalbek and so forth around the world is more evidence. And also the incredible heights of knowledge that, say, the Mayans, for example, had about 2012 in the sunspots, which we've also discussed on past shows. We've discussed all these issues in the past shows. That's why we discussed them previously to lead up to this show. Okay, I mean, how did the Mayans know about sunspots when our modern-day scientists couldn't even predict it? Okay, because Pat Garrell wrote that book predicting that the Mayans were predicting sunspots vanishing right before 2012. He wrote that book, and then 2 years later, that's exactly what happened. So, and then just the fact that all our religious texts exist in accord with each other and with archaeology, this is all just very interesting evidence for the story of religion as being, the story of ufology globally as being how the world actually came to be. And our scientists can't say this much in any way, unfortunately. They can't tell, they have no coherent story. They have very vague ideas such as, you know, 15 billion years ago there was a speck of infinitely dense energy that expanded, that's called the Big Bang, and there were some asymmetries in it and they cooled down and formed galaxies, and nobody really knows how those asymmetries were there, or somehow there. And the galaxies formed, and somehow out of that came plants and Earth, came life. And nobody can really explain that. So it's just, it's not nearly as precise and empirical as the story of world history that our religions give us, that our ufology gives us. So, the way our bodies are structured, as we've discussed on last week's show, is also evidence. There's so much design, as we discussed in the June 30 show, in our bodies and all over the solar system and so forth, that it just basically, you have to conclude, some of the evidence we get on the June 30 show is so powerful, you basically have to conclude that the solar system and our bodies were constructed as spiritual, mathematical, almost Pythagorean entities. So there's more evidence. So the evidence is actually just popping out of the woodwork all over the place, and it's just so amazing how this all works. I mean, we're told specifically the opposite of what's true. We're told religions are all a joke, it's all fake, it's all a bunch of games, and people arrogantly in the academic world come up to me and say, oh, you're just a little boy studying all this stuff. There's none of it's real. And then I will just tell them the evidence right there, and they'll just ignore it. Okay? And then the TV will reinforce their view that there's everything is irreligious and everything's scientific. And then, I mean, what big predictions and big discoveries have the scientists really given us in the last 50 years? I mean, not much. There's a couple here and there, but certainly nothing even in the order of magnitude of the conehead skulls. Well, technically that's actually a scientific discovery, but I'm talking about our view, our version of science we have here in America, which is corporate, which is big money. Okay, it's not real science. It's money-driven science, as we've talked about in past shows. So that corporate science really, I mean, take our modern medical technology. But with all that technology, all that remarkable stuff in the hospitals and labs and universities and everything, they haven't given us a cure for anything in the last 50 years. The last cure for anything is, what was that vaccine for smallpox? Polio. Now, that's called a cure, and that was over 50 years ago. That's why it shows that time frame, 50 years, there being no cure for anything. But it's very controversial that it's possible, as I've discussed in Chapter 5 of my book, Corporatism, it may not have been the case, actually, that the vaccine cured polio. It may have been the case that, just like the swine flu now, the media is hyping it like crazy, and it's really nothing, at least at the moment, unless it mutates into something. But at the moment, it's just a complete media circus over, you know, the flu, which we've always had with us. It appears that polio was like that, and when the vaccine came out, the definition of polio was changed to such a degree that the cases went down dramatically because people didn't fit into the box of polio anymore. Okay, so pretty amazing. But anyways, there's similar arguments you could give with smallpox as well. That appears to have been cured by quarantine, not by a vaccine. It's just pretty astounding. Just think about it. Let's say there were a couple cures or something that modern medicine had over the last 50 years. I mean, but still, with all that, they're not giving us anything. They're not giving us much. They're not giving us anything, really. But then you look at all this evidence and so forth that I'm piling up here that the world religions give us and how scientific it is with all this archaeology and telemetation and the placebo effect and all this really actually true science behind it, you just become astounded to realize that the true view of reality is the opposite of what you've been taught is true. You've been taught that this corporate science view of reality is true when it's actually fake and it doesn't have any discoveries hardly or medical cures or anything behind it. And then the true view, the one that has all the see it with your own eyes evidence, is you're told that that's a joke. And people go along with this. They believe it. They believe, oh, modern technology of medical technology is so wonderful. And then you get multiple sclerosis, and you go to the doctor, and they say, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do. But here's some expensive pills that have a ton of side effects, which will supposedly alleviate your symptoms before you die. I mean, what is it with us? So I think I made my point. So the idea here, okay, there's another important theory that I want to talk about. Okay, it's a theory. Yeah, a lot of the stuff I've talked about so far up to this point on this first show on the history and nature of religion, I think is pretty scientific in the true sense of the word scientific. I mean, we're basing a lot of our discussion here on archaeology and what we can see, and so that makes our not a lot of theory, but a lot of fact. Do I want to use that word that strong? I'm not sure. So, but a theory I want to discuss is the splice theory, which we've discussed in the past, and that's the idea that humans are a hybrid between some sort of earthly creature and the sky creatures. So the sky creatures, the star creatures, came to Earth and crossbred themselves, genetically engineered themselves as a mixture with some, maybe a primate, a monkey, or something. Now, that would explain a lot of things that explain, for example, why we have the capacity for religious experience, which is not accounted for in Darwinian evolution. And it exists. It's an obsession of people all over the world. Okay, like in Mecca and shamanic cultures and Buddhism. I mean, people will devote their whole lives to what is really a non-Darwinian pursuit, and that is for spiritual ecstasy. You don't have a lot of reproductive success and survival of the fittest when you're sitting in a monastery all day. Now, the thing is that in India, it used to be that the vast majority of the population lived that way. Okay? So there's some problems with Darwinism in trying to explain that one. So, as usual. But the splice theory is very fascinating. It would explain why we've got these capacities for this insanely complex mathematics, which also does not have any Darwinian usefulness. I mean, you don't need to know how to do super abstract Lie group algebra and ring theory, which is, you know, a mathematics of the super quantum domain. When you're picking bananas and trying to find a mate to reproduce with and build a brick house and so forth, you don't need that mathematics, which is on a totally different order of complexity. So why would that emerge? You see a pattern growing here? Religious experience and our capacity for ultra-high-level mathematics are both explained by the splice theory, the hybrid theory, the theory that we are a crossbreed of between an animal and the star creatures. The star creatures theory of hybrid creation of genetically modified humans, genetically engineered humans, is explained. It explains these oddities about humans, but they specifically contradict Darwinism. Okay, in other words, you can't have these things if Darwinism is true. So somebody tell me why all our experts in universities don't wake up to this. You know, I mean, we can't have these ultra-mathematical creatures. I mean, and furthermore, I mean, a lot of people make a big to-do about homosexuality. That's another peculiarity about that Darwin. I know Darwin has tried to explain that one, but I don't think they've succeeded. We can discuss that some other time. So, humans are created in the image of the sky creatures, the sky gods, the gods. And it says that right in our religious texts, of course. So that doesn't mean that our bodies necessarily are created in the image of the sky creatures. And if the cone heads are some of these sky creatures, that for sure is the case because their heads are shapes are different than ours. But what a human actually is consciousness. Okay? So that would probably mean that our consciousness was created in the image of God, the gods, the sky creatures. As it says in Genesis 1:24, and there's all these other verses I've listed, like Colossians 3:11, that say the same. So our super consciousness is imbued with the light of heaven, imbued with divinity. And so that's probably more what these religious texts mean when they say that we're created in the image of God, the holy light. They probably don't mean necessarily our body is created in the image of God, although that could be what they mean. But definitely what they probably mean is that our consciousness is an emanation of holiness. Okay? And that goes along with everything I've been saying so far in this show about how your super consciousness is the ecstasy of heaven. Okay? So, now there's several definitions and so forth that we want to discuss. I think I'm going to discuss a few of these before we end this show. One thing I want to discuss first is mysticism. Okay, now, there's a lot of debate as to what mysticism is in our culture, and if Christianity is mystical or not, or if other religions are mystical. And I know a lot of more, we can call them Christians who believe that Christianity is just a set of beliefs. There's no religious experience involved, just believe certain things, and then that's what it is. They often get very offended when you say that Christianity is mystical. But the problem is the following. Mysticism is the attempt to have, or the literal having of, direct experience and contact of the holy light of heaven, and or the gods, and or God. Okay, so if you have direct experience of the spiritual agents, or agent, that's mysticism. Now, let's take Saul on the road to Damascus again. What do you think he was doing? He was having direct, see it with his own eyes, experience of the light of Elohim, of God. Okay, so what do you think Moses was doing when he had his horns of light going up that mountain? Same thing. Okay, so you see we're getting it here? Christianity is mystical. And the point here is all the religions are mystical. They're all about generating ecstasy. How do you generate ecstasy? You bring yourself, your consciousness in contact with the holy light that is everywhere, or you understand that your consciousness is an emanation of the holy light that is everywhere. Okay, that's what mysticism is, and that's what all the religions involve, as I just got done explaining for the last some minutes here. So Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, all these ufologies, or this one group of ufology, is also called mysticism. Okay? So there's no needed debate over whether or not religion is mystical or not. You just open up the religious text and you find out that they are. So let me define another thing here. We keep talking about star creatures. Let me define the star creatures. A star creature is, I've got four definitions here, A, B, C, D. Definition A is a person or person-like entity with religious powers, and which is a star creature. B, I found this one very interesting. A star creature is a dragon or a reptoid-like creature with religious powers, and which is a star creature. C, a star creature is a force or energy or spiritual field of religious power, and which is written about in all the world ufologies, all the world religions. And the definition D of what a star creature is some mixture of A and C. So, for example, in C, we talk about the star creatures as being a force, spiritual field, an energy or light. Okay, and then in A, we talk about it being a person or person-like entity with the ultimate power. So, if you take Saul on the road to Damascus, that's really a mixture of A and C, because he witnessed the light of God. But we're supposed to understand in Christianity that God is we're in God's image. So there's something person-like to God. You can have a relationship with it. So there's a mixture of A and C. So the star creature in Christianity there is a person and a force, a field of holy light at the same time. So now this is pretty much in all religions, this is the way the star powers, the star creatures are discussed. So I think that I'm going to call this the end of this first section on the nature and religion philosophy. Sorry, the nature and philosophy of religion. Ecstasy, extraterrestrials, light, meditation, dragons, and divinity, part one. We covered a lot of ground. We'll cover much more next time. I want to thank everybody for listening. And tune in Thursday when we have The Philosophy of Eastern Religion, Part 1, Light, Bliss, Meditation, Ancient Flying Machines, and Nirvana, Part 1. And then go to antimatterradio.com to listen to all the past shows and to check the show schedule for the incredible upcoming shows. And I hope all of you noticed that all these shows fit together. Everything I've talked about in past shows is leading up to this point. Now, you can listen to this show without listening to the past shows, but a lot of clarification has been given to what we're discussing in this show and the past shows. So thank you very much, for everybody, for listening. We'll look forward to catching you next week.